It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer, and we are in a place called the Beehive up on Carson Street for this particular segment of the program. We thought it might be good to have a hot beverage because we're going to be talking about cold weather. In fact, a super cold winter is on tap for much of the country. So say the editors of the Old Farmer's Almanac. First published in 1792, the Almanac has been serving up weather predictions, food facts, and humorous anecdotes yearly. Joining us with behind-the-scenes details of the production is Tim Clark, an editor of the Old Farmer's Almanac, which is going to be in its 224th year of publication this year. Tim Clark, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
I'm glad to be here, especially in this wonderful atmosphere.
Tell us some of the history of the Old Farmer's Almanac. What is the story behind this 224-year-old publication?
Well, one thing you need to know is that back in 1792, almanacs were some of the most common forms of publishing. There were 16 almanacs being produced in the Boston area alone, hundreds of them through what there was of the United States in 1792, which was not as much as we have now. Every family and household had to have one, not only for advice about planting by the moon and other kinds of household stuff, but because what I like to call the heart of the almanac — almanac comes from an Arabic term meaning calendar of the heavens — is the 100% accurate predictions of when the sun and moon will rise and set, where the planets will be doing. And farmers needed that stuff because so much of what they did involved looking at the phase of the moon, planting by the moon. I studied folklore in college, and I've always loved it. And I've always found you got to look below the surface in folklore for where the truth of it is. So one thing they believed then was certain kind of plants that bear fruit above ground in the light should be planted in the dark of the moon, which means right after the new moon, because what we can see of the moon grows larger every day. So it's a kind of a metaphor. You want those tomatoes and beans that are growing in the light to get bigger all the time. On the other hand, plants that bear their fruit below the ground, potatoes, peanuts, carrots, should be planted in the light of the moon, which means right after the full moon, because then it's the darker part of the moon that appears to be getting bigger all the time. If that's not too complicated. But it's a metaphor, you know? It has no science to it. It has poetry to it. And that's one of the things I love about folklore. Or take Groundhog Day. We all know that if the groundhog sees its shadow, it's supposed to go — it's just we have six more weeks of winter. Well, guess what? You're going to have six more weeks of winter anyway on February 2nd, at least. What's it all about? It's about reminding farmers not to take good weather in February very seriously. Don't plant your crops in February. You will lose them, and you might starve. So the truth of that folklore is to remind farmers, don't trust warm weather in February. It's not going to last.
Well, you can certainly understand why people hundreds of years ago would have found this useful. And with all due respect, in this digital age, you're laughing.
Why should we care?
No, not why should we care, but in this increasingly digital and online age, with all of the electronic resources that we have at our disposal, satellites and views of the world that no one could have conceived of hundreds of years ago, how does the Farmer's Almanac stay relevant? Why would we even want to rely on it today?
For precisely the reasons you just explained. We are surrounded by technology. It's overwhelming. If you live in a city like Pittsburgh, you rarely see the sky. The Old Farmer's Almanac is a relief. It's something for people who are a little stressed out by the world we live in, a chance to go back to an earlier world in which you do see the sky and you know what's happening there. The Old Farmer's Almanac wisdom is to remind us constantly to pay attention to the earth. Pay attention to the movement of the planets and the stars, to the phases of the moon, to when the sun rises, pay attention to the behavior of birds and animals, which have long been seen as predictors of weather, pay attention to the growth of plants. You know, an old belief was that, you know, you can tell what the winter's going to be like by the number of nuts that the squirrels are gathering. And you can also tell by how high the hornets build their nests in the trees. And people say, well, that's ridiculous. You'd have to watch every squirrel and every hornet's nest in the woods. Who has time to do that? If you were a farmer in 1792, you knew darn well how many acorns the squirrels were collecting because you were out there counting them, literally, because you were going to feed those acorns to your pigs. And you needed to know how high the hornets were building their nests, because you're going to be cutting down some of those trees they're building in, and you want to make sure that it's not, you know, you're not knocking down a tree that has a big hornet's nest in it. It's just what you said. We pay attention to different things now. And I don't expect everybody in America to want to read the old Farmer's Almanac, because it's not going to be relevant to a lot of them. That's what we've always found. Our audience tends to be older, tends to be rural. But some of that audience will grow into old Farmer's Almanac readers, because they're going to feel like they're losing track of nature. They're going to feel like they're losing track of what's happening in the sky and around them. We are the place to go to find out what's happening in the sky and in nature around you. And we have those things for every day of the year. That's why the little hole is in the corner of the publication. It's because it's not something you read and throw away. It's a reference work. You stick a string through that, you hang it wherever you want. The old joke is you hang it in the privy. You can hang anywhere you want. And you can find something new about every single day by checking the Old Farmer's Almanac.
And certainly technology is not infallible. We see weather predictors who rely on satellites and other things like radar to predict weather, and many times they're wrong. The Farmer's Almanac somehow is uncannily accurate. How do you account for that?
Well, because we've been claiming to be 80% accurate for 224 years. Never 79, never 81.
So perception is reality?
Perception is always reality. And in this case, we are so respectful of tradition that we would not dream of ever claiming anything but 80% accuracy.
Why 80? Why not 90? 95?
Well, ask yourself. 95 sounds too high to be real. 60, 50 doesn't impress very much. If you look around all the different people claiming to predict things, you will find more often than not they claim 80% accuracy. Check it next time you hear. As it happens, we do pretty well, between 60 and 80% most years. Last year, for some bizarre reason, 96% accurate. We questioned whether we should publicize that because we were afraid people would start to expect it every year. And I'll say right here, it was a fluke. It was a fluke. Everything lined up right for us last year. You're not going to see 96% accuracy every year. But 80% is not bad. Better than average. Better than random chance. Anything better than 50% is better than random chance. We're on to something. And what we're on to is actually something very old, which is the solar cycle, the sunspot cycle. Galileo, when he got his telescope going, identified sunspots. The Chinese identified and counted sunspots long before Galileo. And what we know now from solar science is that more sunspots means a more active sun, a sun that is producing more radiant energy. It goes in an 11-year cycle from active sun to quiet sun and back again. Right now, we're in an extremely quiet solar cycle. Generally speaking, the more sunspots, the warmer the weather. The fewer, the colder. So we are in a time, 3 years in a row now, we've predicted very cold winters, and I expect we'll continue to see that right into the next solar cycle.
And certainly there are a lot of people that are interested in hearing what to expect this winter, and we'll get to that. But it's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. And my guest is Tim Clark, who is an editor of the Old Farmer's Almanac, as we sit in the Beehive Cafe on Carson Street on the south side. But it's more about, the Farmer's Almanac is more than just a weather predictor. It's well known for many weird facts that it includes within its pages. Where do you find them, and how do you decide which ones to include?
Well, that's always the toughest problem, right, in any art, is what do you leave out? We have certain areas that we need to cover, agriculture, gardening. You know, only 2% of Americans work directly on farms now, but 46 million households have gardens. So that's kind of taken over the farmer's part of the old farmer's almanac. People cook, not as much as they used to, but still. So we always have lots of recipes. Astronomy is one of our provinces, so we always have a story about astronomy. This year we've got one about the supermoon that's coming on November 14th of 2016, which is the moon at extreme perigee. It's not bigger, it's closer. So it looks bigger. It's going to look 14% bigger, which is very as big as it gets, and it's going to be 30% brighter. The last time we had a full moon at extreme perigee like this was 1948, and the next time will be 2034. So it's a rare event. Go out and see it and hope that it's not cloudy that night.
Other things that you guys focus on, one of the things that caught my eye that we'll see in this year's almanac is understanding your pet's emotions, especially those of love and jealousy. What about that, and why would you even include that in the almanac?
Well, the functional equivalent of farm animals today is pets. That's what everybody has instead of farm animals. And so we see that as within our purview. And the interesting things we discovered about the science of animal affection is that animal scientists generally agree that our pets do feel affection for us, for each other, and sometimes, remarkably, for other species. Some of you may remember a few years ago when a moose fell in love with a cow named Jessica in Vermont.
I do remember that. Quite the romance that was.
And he hung around for 76 days. But Jessica never apparently returned his affections. We also have a story in there about a donkey named Jelly Bean who was in love with a goat named Mr. G. And when circumstances on their farm required that they would be separated, Mr. G just about pined away. He stopped eating. He wouldn't come out of his stall. Finally, they decided to put these two back together again, and then Romeo and Juliet came out well this time.
Oh, well, that's good. I'm glad that there's at least one documented romance within those pages. Also within the Farmer's Almanac, you present do-it-yourself project ideas, including low-cost fire starters and recycled soap. What's up with that?
Well, Robert B. Thomas, our founder, his motto was that we should be useful with a pleasant degree of humor. So the humor explains some of the stuff we do. Practical? Absolutely. And these happen to be tips from our readers. These fire starters. Well, use your dryer lint, collect your dryer lint, and stuff them into empty toilet paper cardboard tubes, and they are great ways to start your fires.
So when the grid goes down, right, you can rely on your toilet paper, cardboard, hollow tubes, and dryer lint.
Dryer lint, absolutely. You know, another old New England saying is, use it up, wear it out, make it do or do without. It's intensely practical. New Hampshire, I believe, is the only state that auctions off annually its roadkill.
True.
What about the recycled soap?
Recycled soap, well, what do you do with those little slivers of soap that are always left over and are too small to use in the shower? There's lots of things you can do with them. You can, for one thing, you can put them in a mesh bag and collect them until you got enough leftover soap to make a new bar of soap. It fits that New England frugality, which really applies to the old Farmer's Almanac. It was originally a New England publication, although we sell it all over the country now.
Amazing stuff. So, a lot of people are waiting to hear what the big prediction for this winter is. What do you have for us, Tim, for the winter of 2015-2016, according to the old Farmer's Almanac?
Well, here in the region of the country, we cover 16 regions, and this is the one we call the Ohio Valley. I'm afraid it's going to be a colder than normal winter and a snowier than normal winter. You're going to have a cool spring, a hot summer, and a warm fall. But I'm afraid I can't give you any relief from this trend going towards cold weather. As I say, this is the third winter in a row that we're predicting to be colder and snowier than normal, and that has everything to do with a quiet period in the sun. And there are some experts in England, the Royal Astronomy Society, predicted the other day that this is a trend that might continue for the next 50 years. Here's the good news. If so, it may counteract a lot of the negative effects of climate change, global warming, elsewhere. We may get another 50 years to learn what to do about that because of the quiet sun.
And I was just about to ask you if you factor in the climate change issues, and you're nodding your head. Yes, you do.
Yeah, we have to. I mean, the science is proven. The big argument is a political one about, is it man-made or is it produced by natural cycles? And we'll just stay neutral on that. But it's happening. The years are getting warmer. The summers are getting warmer. The poles are getting warmer, which is a big issue. So we do take that into consideration.
Now, I have to ask you, because, boy, if anybody would know, and this just occurred to me, but 224 years, right? Mm-hmm. So what were things like? This almanac started before we really had heavy, heavy industry. So you tell me. I mean, I know you don't want to wade into a political argument, but what does the evidence show as far as whether it's man-made or cyclical? What better thing to consult than the Farmer's Almanac about that?
Well, one of our most famous forecasts, maybe, and I'll explain the maybe, was for the 1816 almanac. It predicted snow in New England in July. Now, there's a story that that was by mistake. There's a story that Robert B. Thomas was sick, then he turned it over to his printer to fill in the July forecast, and the guy was mad at him or had a funny sense of humor, so he put in snow in July. Lo and behold, it snowed in July, not because of human intervention, but because of an enormous volcano that erupted in the South Pacific and threw so much dust into the atmosphere that there were frosts in every month of the year in New England, and thousands of people died of famine in Europe. It's actually just about, if you look at the progress of the Western migration from New England, that's the year a lot of farmers in New England gave up and moved west. It was just too hard. So these things happen. You know, we fall on one side with people that say it's natural events, because these natural events do happen. You know, a good-sized volcano can change the weather, and it doesn't have to be an enormous one. Volcanoes are erupting all over the Earth all the time, depending on where they are, especially Arctic volcanoes. There's several of them going off right now.
I think I hear one in the background.
Yeah. They can put enough dust in the atmosphere to reduce the Earth's temperature by a degree or two. That doesn't sound like much, but on an average, it means much colder weather. But at the same time, clearly what we're doing in terms of CO2 is creating this greenhouse effect that, you know, we've already seen the results of it. As I say, there's an argument about who's responsible. I don't care. We got to deal with what's happening right now. And, you know, the latest stuff I saw about the Antarctic ice cap breaking up, that's terrifying, because that's not a little bit of ocean rise. That's 6 feet. And 6 feet would drown most of the big cities on the East Coast, as well as a large number of small nations.
Well, certainly food for thought and lots of things to think about and consider within the Old Farmer's Almanac. The 224th edition is coming out. When is it out?
It's been out since the 1st of September, so it's available on newsstands now. It's available in bookstores, Barnes & Noble especially. Look in the reference section, because that's what we are. And you can also order it online at almanac.com. We have a big website that also will give you current forecasts, advice on cooking and gardening, and all the wacky stuff that we do. And I'm sort of the editor of wacky around here, so.
Tim Clark is an editor of the Old Farmer's Almanac, joining us here on Essential Pittsburgh out in the Beehive on Carson Street. And we'll get you your tea, Tim. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me and for this outstanding venue.
And we go from Old Farmer's Almanac to new technology. Bobby Zappala joins us next, a regular contributor to Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.